It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is your host, Bill Carnes, on the Second Amendment Radio Show. Of course, we just shortened that down to 2A Radio. The website is 2aradio.com. Today's show is all about the government, its primary job function, and how it fails to actually perform said job function. The primary role of government is laid out in the Constitution. It's to protect our freedoms and liberties at all levels, to protect our freedom and liberties. That is job number one. The very primary focus of the everyday, day in and day out of the government is spelled out to protect our freedom and liberties. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to go through many examples, through several news stories, of how that doesn't happen at all. In the actual day-to-day operation of the government itself and all of its agents. Now, keep in mind, the government is not an entity that is just void of human life. The government is made up of hundreds of thousands of people. Millions, in fact. If you go from your local town all the way up to the federal level, every level of government is that of people, whether they're elected, appointed, or employed. They are the government. Every agent of the, everybody who collects a paycheck from a government entity is a government employee. And by nature, their job is to protect our freedoms and liberties first, and then the other aspects come well beyond that. So, you may recall, if you've been listening to the show for any time, about a murder that occurred in Las Vegas. And I'm going to call it a murder because that's my opinion of what it was. With a Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department officer who falsified search warrant requests and murdered the suspect with his own personal AR-15 on the bathroom floor, one shot to the head. Well, that was by narcotics detective Brian Yant of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. B-R-Y-A-N-Y-A-N-T. Now, here's the story. Brian Yant, a narcotics detective who killed an unarmed man in a controversial 2010 shooting, has been reassigned to a desk job, according to the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department officials on Tuesday. That's yesterday. Assistant Sheriff Ray Flynn said Yant had been on paid administrative leave since June 11th, a drug raid that led, since June 11th, a June 11th drug raid that led to the fatal shooting of 21-year-old Trevin Cole, a low-level marijuana dealer. Assistant Sheriff Flynn said an internal investigation concluded that Yant violated several agency policies in connection with the fatal shooting. Well, not to mention the homicide that occurred. Flynn said the most severe violations included how Yant prepared and served a search warrant in the incident. Yant also was found to have, neglected his duty. The internal investigation also faulted Yant for violating other minor department policies. Yant was reassigned to a desk job last week, Flynn said. The assistant sheriff declined to detail Yant's new position, saying only that involved, quote, monitoring crime trends and significant events. Flynn said Yant's new job will not involve interacting with the public. He says, quote, it does not involve suspect contact, Flynn said. It does not involve any work on the street. Reaction to the results of the department's internal investigation of Yant was swift and critical Tuesday morning. Nichelle Branton, Cole's mother, the victim here, said management with the police department has basically condoned Yant's actions. "I'm outraged," Branton says. "I'm outraged at the fact that they allowed him to come back to work. It's disrespectful for all of the good police officers out there." You know, a few of them. Andre Logomansereno, a lawyer representing Cole's family, was incredulous that Yant would be allowed to continue to wear a badge. He says, quote, "It just shows that if you've done things Brian Yant has done at Metro, you get away with Metro. Or you get to stay with Metro, pardon me. Yant, hired by Las Vegas police in September of 2000, has been involved in 3 controversial shootings, resulting in 2 deaths. Logomansereno said that he will soon file a civil wrongful death suit against Las Vegas police and Yant. Flint said he couldn't comment on the specifics of the disciplinary actions handed down in Yant's case, saying only that, quote, he received discipline below the level of termination. Okay. Yant is a public employee. You, Assistant Sheriff Flynn, are also a public employee. Everything that you do is public record. So if you don't want to say it, do you really mean that we have to go through Freedom of Information Act to find out what the deal is? Just do what you're supposed to do. In August, a Clark County coroner's inquest jury deliberated for only 90 minutes before finding that Yant's actions in Cole's shooting were justified. Not excusable, but justified. Yant told the jury he feared for his life when Cole raised his hands in a shooting stance during a nighttime drug raid on Bonanza Road near Eastern Avenue. Not the most pleasant area of town. That night, Yant and a 6-member narcotics unit conducted the raid. Yant testified that he kicked open the bathroom door during the raid and saw Cole squatting in front of the toilet. The flashlight of Yant's AR-15 rifle had just failed, but he said there was enough light in the darkened bathroom to see Cole and his actions. Yant said Cole weighed almost 300 pounds, rose to his feet while moving his hands forward in a shooting motion. What is a shooting motion without the bang? "Unfortunately, he made an aggressive act towards me. He made me do my job," Yant testified at the inquest. After Cole was shot, he was found clutching a yellow tube of lip balm in his left hand. Police found no gun in the bathroom or apartment. A baggie, was found next to Cole's body, and bits of marijuana were floating in a toilet. During the inquest, Assistant District Attorney Chris Owens noted that the evidence, such as the position of Cole's body, the downward angle of the bullet through his cheek and neck, and testimony from fellow officers who did not hear both the door kicking and a gunshot, pointed towards an accidental discharge simultaneous with the door kick. The inquest also examined other problematic aspects of Yant's police work in the Cole case. We'll talk a little bit more about this hypocrisy when we return. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back for the break. Again, we are carrying on with the outcome of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department former narcotics detective Bryant Yant's murder of a suspect, Trevin Cole. Now, Yant's affidavit, he said that Cole had a history of drug trafficking. Despite having a copy of Cole's California driver's license, complete with a physical description and date of birth, Yant confused Cole with a Trevin Cole from Houston and California, who was 7 years older and at least 3 inches shorter and 100 pounds lighter. Here's how it worked. Brian Yant wanted to bust Trevin Cole. So what he did was he went online into the police database and found another Trevin Cole who had lived in California, now he's in Houston, who had a much more troubled and colored and violent past with police contact. So when he filled out his affidavit for a search warrant, to which he swore under oath, oh yes, the information held here is all true, it's the same guy, swore, upheld his hand and swore, best of my knowledge, all of this is absolutely true. Knowing that he'd used a different Trevin Cole. Again, 7 years older, 3 inches shorter, 100 pounds lighter than the suspect that Yant had, the Trevin Cole who's living in Vegas. This is a guy who was living in Houston. That's the guy that he used, and the judge looked at it and said, well, yeah, this guy looks like a bad guy. Go ahead, use a no-knock warrant and kick the door. And here's Yant thinking, yeah. Falsifying an affidavit for a search warrant. Now, Cole's fiance, Sequoia Pierce, who was 9 months pregnant with Cole's daughter at the time, hid in the closet during the raid. According to a search warrant affidavit, Cole, in 4 transactions during a 5-week period, sold $840 worth of marijuana to undercover police. $840. The marijuana totaled 1.8 ounces and led to the drug raid at Cole's apartment. Yant's supervisor at the time of the raid was Sergeant John Harney, who was also the subject of an internal investigation. That investigation has concluded, but no decisions about discipline have been made, according to Assistant Sheriff Flynn. Flynn added that the department's use of force board cleared Yant in the Cole shooting, but he didn't know the details of the decision. When convened, the use of force board is made up of 4 civilians with no ties to Las Vegas police and 3 members of the police department. They include an at-large captain who does not supervise the officer under review, the training captain, and a peer of the same rank who does not work with the officer in question. The 4 citizens are randomly selected from a pool of people trained to be on the board. The board can recommend discipline against the officer ranging from written reprimand to termination. The board's review is not considered a public process and is standard after an officer-involved shooting. Cole's fatal shooting was the 3rd time Yant had used his weapon while on duty. During a 2002 inquest into the fatal shooting of a robbery suspect, Yant's statements contradicted the evidence. Again, this is twice now. Yant said he was chasing Richard Travis Brown, dubbed the Candy Bar Robber by police, for his 41 heists in the early morning of November 17, 2001. After a vehicle pursuit, Yant chased Brown on foot. Yant told the inquest jury that Brown reached for a gun as the two ran down the sidewalk. Yant fired 3 to 4 rounds. Brown fell face first. The officer continued to yell commands at Brown, who was on the ground, to drop his gun. Yant said Brown then tried to aim the gun at him. Yant fired another 3 to 4 rounds, killing Brown. However, a crime scene analyst recovered Brown's handgun on the sidewalk 35 feet away from where he'd been shot. Over 10 yards. Almost 13 yards away. Yant was also involved in a December 5th, 2003 shooting in Country Club Hills, a subdivision of the Summerlin area of town, a nicer area. The same reasonable area of town where police murdered. Who was that? That's right, Eric Scott at the Costco. You've heard a lot about that here on the show. Let's see, Yant was investigating a prowler in the neighborhood before dawn. When Yant spotted the prowler identified as Melvin Gilchrist, police said the man charged Yant and threw a butcher knife and an aluminum baseball bat at him. Police said Yant could not see the bat clearly and mistook it for a shotgun. Gilchrist was shot in the hip and survived. He later pled guilty to resisting an officer with a deadly weapon. Maggie McLeach, legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Nevada, said Yant's sloppy work on Cole's search warrant amounts to extreme violations. She said that because of Yant's history and other questionable officer-involved shootings, she would expect Las Vegas police to be more transparent in their investigation of him and disclose why and how he was disciplined. McLeach said that the public should be concerned about the interaction with Yant. Quote, the public wants to know whether he'll be allowed back onto the street and under what circumstances. So, job 1 is to protect our freedom and liberties And what has Officer Brian Yant done? On top of that, what has the entire Las Vegas Metro Police Department done knowing that this guy is a questionable cop? He's been on the force now. This is year number 11. Seasoned veteran by now, 11 years on the street, sure. He shot three people, having killed two of them. And by looking at the basic information, the basic evidence, it would appear as though he's murdered the two. These are the same guys where we tell you Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department was a combination of the Clark County Sheriff's Department and the Las Vegas City Police Department combined in 1973. Maybe it was 72. I think it was 73 to form Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. They cover the city of Las Vegas and unincorporated Clark County. That's what they cover. In that time, there's not been a single cop involved in a shooting-related death, in any death of any suspect, where they've been prosecuted. If you've been a Las Vegas Metro cop since the inception of Las Vegas Metro, and you killed somebody, you've gotten away with it every single time. Las Vegas Metro has a 00 status for their cops. 00 status. The coroner's inquest, which is the official process, the unofficial official process, it's supposed to be relatively unofficial, have some official amounts to it, but not really, is a joke. They're supposed to be a fact-finding organization. It's supposed to be a fact-finding process. What it's molded into is the officials there, what they concentrate on is how do we get the cop cleared, especially if it's questionable. They will work tirelessly, day and night, even postpone an inquest hearing to give them more of an opportunity to clear the cops in an otherwise lousy, crappy shooting. That, if it went to a grand jury, the cops would be prosecuted. There is no grand jury system here for that. There damned well should be. Because these cops are murdering people and getting away with it. They had a cop shoot a guy with a Hero sandwich many years ago. They've had cops shoot people with basketballs, many unarmed people, a guy with a spoon. Trevin Cole, who had chapstick in his hand. Lip balm. He's dead. So, that's what we've got going on. And these guys' main job function is to be on the street protecting freedom and liberty. Nope. It's not what they do, because it's not what the other cops in the training area train them to do. There is a systemic failure going on here. And it's not just reserved to Las Vegas Metro. We're going to talk about it with one dealing with a cop in Seattle after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Attention all long-range precision riflemen and long-distance shooting hunters. Come and join other like-minded long-range riflemen this April for the Bill Carnes 2A Radio Precision Rifle Course being held just outside Las Vegas, Nevada. This is your chance to put your gear to the test and perfect your long-range rifle shooting skills. Think of it as Sniper 101. We'll be collecting repeatable data from 100 yards out to 1,000 yards and beyond. Imagine having confirmed repeatable data for your rifle and the round you choose in 50-yard increments out to the furthest limit of your trajectories. You'll learn the secrets of the proper way to clean and maintain your precision rifle for extended life and accuracy well beyond your expectations. You'll also have the opportunity to shoot a 50-caliber sniper rifle and hit a target at 1 mile. To find out more, go to victoryshoot.org. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Visit victoryshoot.org today. That's victoryshoot.org.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Welcome back from the break. We're talking about today how every level of government is supposed to, first and foremost, protect our freedom and liberties. But really, how on a day-to-day basis, that's not even a consideration. Seattle is in King County, Washington, and King County prosecutors have decided not to file criminal charges against Seattle police officer Ian Burke and the fatal shooting of a woodcarver by the name of John T. Williams, according to sources familiar with the decision. The prosecutor's office was expected to announce a decision at a news conference earlier today, according to the sources. Shortly afterwards, the Seattle Police Chief John Diaz was expected to disclose at a news conference that the department's Firearm Review Board has reached a final decision in the August 30th, 2010 shooting that it was not justified. It's not justified, but yet they're not prosecuting. The board's conclusion, reached in private deliberations a few days ago, allows the police department to begin internal proceedings that could lead to Burke's firing or other discipline, according to the source. In October, the board reached a preliminary decision that the shooting was unjustified. Now, Deputy Police Chief Nick Metz said Tuesday he couldn't comment on detail on the department's plans, but said the police officials were working on a statement on the course of the case. Metz said the department was aware that the outcome is a, quote, very sensitive issue, end quote, and that the community is watching closely. You bet your backside they are. Burke has been on paid leave since the shooting in August. The prosecutor's office declined Tuesday to discuss its decision. Our decision has not been finalized, and we will make an official announcement in the near future, said Ian Goodhue, Deputy Chief of Staff for the King County Prosecutor, Dan Satterberg. Prosecutors have been confronted with a steep legal hurdle in deciding whether to charge Burke with murder or manslaughter. State law shields police officers from criminal prosecution when they claim they used deadly force in self-defense, unless it can be shown that they acted with malice and a lack of good faith. A spokesman for Mayor Mike McGinn said Tuesday night that Satterberg and Diaz will make statements on the case on Wednesday. Spokesman Mark Matassa did not reveal what would be said. He said McGinn will hold his own news conference also on Wednesday. The decision not to file criminal charges has come about a month after the King County inquest jury reached mixed feelings on the shooting. 4 of 8 jurors found that Burke wasn't facing an imminent threat when he fatally shot Williams, and that he didn't give Williams sufficient time to put down a knife he was carrying during the confrontation on a Seattle sidewalk. One juror found that Burke faced a threat and gave Williams sufficient time. 3 others answered unknown. So only one was with the cop. 4 jurors determined that Burke believed he was in danger when he encountered Williams, while 4 others answered unknown. So, half and half. The findings regarding the actual threat to Burke stand in a contrast to previous King County inquest decisions in which jurors have almost always upheld the actions of police officers involved in deadly shootings. The inquest jurors weren't asked to weigh whether Burke was guilty or innocent of wrongdoing in the shootings. The results were reviewed by the prosecutor's office to help determine whether to file criminal charges. Even before the inquest, Burke, who's 27 years old, who joined the department in July of 2008, so basically a rookie, had been stripped of his gun and badge as a result of the preliminary findings by the Firearms Review Board and Diaz, the police chief, that the shooting was unjustified, according to sources. The board waited to make a final decision until after the inquest. The board made up of Deputy Chief Carl Creamer, 2 captains and a lieutenant, heard testimony in October from civilian witnesses and police investigators. One board member sat in on the inquest. The board determines if officer shootings fall within department policies and procedures. The inquest jury sifted through conflicting testimony and 2 patrol car video and audios that captured some of the confrontation at Bourne Avenue and Howell Street, but not the shooting itself. Their answers did not have to be unanimous. Evidence presented during the inquest showed about 4 seconds elapsed between Burke's first order to when Williams put down the knife and when he fired. The shooting occurred after Burke saw Williams cross the street holding a flat piece of wood and a knife with a 3-inch blade. Now, the knife I'm holding right here in my pocket, listen to it open. That thing, This knife here has a 4-inch blade. Okay? 3-inch blade is nothing. Williams, a member of Canada's First Nations people, which would be Native American and Indian, used the knife for carving, according to his family, carving the piece of wood he was also carrying. Burke got out of his patrol car and followed Williams onto the sidewalk. Burke shouted at Williams to get his attention and ordered him 3 times to put down the knife. Burke fired when Williams didn't respond, hitting him 4 times. Burke testified during the inquest that he was initially concerned because Williams showed signs of impairment while carrying a knife. Big deal. Not a crime. He said when he sought to question Williams, Williams turned towards him with a very stern, very serious, very confrontational look on his face. Again, not a crime. Burke told jurors, quote, still had the knife out and was in a very confrontational posture when he opened fire. Williams, a chronic inebriate, had a blood alcohol level measured during his autopsy of 0.18%, above the 0.08%, which a driver is deemed legally drunk. So the guy was lit. Big deal. During the inquest, 2 witnesses contradicted Burke, saying that they didn't see Williams do anything threatening before he shot. Burke testified that shortly after the shooting, he told a witness, a responding officer, and a detective that Williams had not complied with his order to put down the knife. He acknowledged that, at that time, he did not tell them that Williams had threatened him. It wasn't until hours later, Burke testified that he provided a detailed written statement alleging that Williams had menacingly displayed the knife and pre-attack indicators. Right. Williams' knife was found folded in the closed position after the shooting. Okay, that clears things up. Jurors unanimously found that Williams was carrying an open knife when first seen by Burke. But 4 answered no, and 4 answered unknown when asked if the blade was open when Burke fired. They found it closed. Okay, here's the deal. This cop, Burke, B-I-R-K, sees a guy walking down the street. For some reason or other, decides, I think I see a knife in this guy's hand. He's got a piece of wood. I need to see what's going on. He gets out of his car. He starts walking up the street behind the guy, pulls out his gun, points it at him, tells him to turn around, tells him to put the knife down to the drunk guy. Drunk guy's probably trying to get all this figured out. What? Who are you? What? That's about 4 seconds, and he gets shot dead. Okay. Where in the world were the cops' tactics? Let me tell you how to handle this. You see somebody like this? He was walking across the front of the cop's car, across the sidewalk, when the cop noticed. So, you take a right turn, you parallel the guy, you get a little bit ahead of him, just a little bit, half a car length maybe, maybe not even that. You stop, you get out of your unit, you can have your gun out, you don't have to have it drawn, you don't have to have it pointed, you can have it out, you can have it in your holster, unsnapped with your hand on it, ready to go, and you tell the guy, excuse me, sir, will you please put down the knife? I'd like to speak with you. If you could just lay it down right there and come over to the car. You've got the vehicle between the two of you. So if the guy even runs at you with the knife, you've got plenty of opportunity to figure out your response from there. Okay? He didn't do this. He inevitably ended up, after 4 seconds of talking to a drunk guy, shooting him dead. Who taught this guy? Again, it is the failures, the systemic failures of the police system in this case. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
And welcome back. So, again today, we're speaking about how, at all levels of government, there are primary A number one job is scripted out to be to protect our freedoms and liberties, and how that is a miserable failure across the board. It's been long lost, long forgotten, long done away with. Well, it happened in both the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate when it came to passing and extending the Patriot Act law. Three very controversial parts of that. Now, the U.S. Senate voted just yesterday to extend controversial counterterrorism search and surveillance powers at the heart of the Patriot Act law, which was adopted after the 9/11/2001 attacks. Keep in mind, these attacks happened 9 and a half years ago, nearly a decade ago, and they were initially a 45-day emergency authority. They've been with us for a decade now. Nearly an entire decade. If you read the legislation, you realize they are in total violation of the Constitution. However, Congress, both House and Senate, continue to pass, and the President continues to sign extensions into law, saying they're emergency powers. That's how Hitler started to get all of his control, because he needed emergency powers. And what happened with that? With the three provisions set to expire February 28th, lawmakers approved legislation to extend them to May 27th, backed by an 86-12 margin in the Senate, which is one day after the House of Representatives passed an extension all the way through December 8th. Keep in mind, the House voted on this last week when they referred to it as a non-controversial piece of legislation. It needed to pass by a two-thirds majority, and it didn't. So they brought it back, gave it limited debate. I think it was only 1 or 2 hours. I think 1 hour of debate in the House that they were allowed to have, if memory serves correct. If not, it wasn't long. They severely limited the debate on it. And of course, they packed it with a lot of people who said, oh yeah, we should do this, it was good for cops. And the naysayers, they didn't give them the floor. And then they passed it by the simple majority, where they only needed 50% plus one. The vote came amid a bitter battle over how long to extend the intrusive powers at the core of the signature legislation response to the terror strikes nearly 10 years ago, and with what safeguards. Keep in mind, guys, with any sort of authority like this that Congress grants to the rest of the government, their other lackey scumbag friends, you must first imagine this power in the hands of your worst enemy. The worst enemy you can think of, and decide whether or not you would feel that your freedom and liberties would still be protected. If the answer is no, then the government shouldn't be passing these laws. The provision allows authorities to use roving wiretaps to track an individual on several telephones, track a non-U.S. national suspect of being a lone wolf terrorist not tied to extremist groups, and to seize personal or business records or, quote, any tangible thing seen as critical to an investigation. While the White House backs extensions, extending those powers through 2013,
The law has drawn fire from an unusual coalition of liberal Democrats and Republicans tied to the arch-conservative Tea Party movement, who say that the laws go too far. Quote, I might not have the votes to stop this bill, but we should at least discuss this in public as adults. We should have the opportunity to explain why the Constitution is being violated, according to Republican freshman senator Rand Paul, the son of Congressman Ron Paul. Here's another quote. It says, we should talk about how we do not have to give up who we are in order to fight terrorism. He continued, echoing complaints from Democratic foes of the measure as well as the ACLU. Senate Intelligence Committee Chairwoman Dianne Feinstein, scumbag Yenta out of California, says, quote, the threat against the United States from terrorism, cyber attacks, the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, and others is at a very high level. Well, of course it is, Hook knows, because in this deal, you ugly witch, had the authority that's been given to Department of Homeland Security and all sorts of law enforcement in the last 10 years that they've had these exceptional powers, half of someone's career, by the way, they should have learned how to otherwise figure out the information that they need without having to violate the rights and the Constitution of the United States of everybody else in America. Dianne Feinstein is a black-heartened witch at heart. Screw America, screw the American people, and let us legislate everyone from cradle to grave, and I am happy to be part of the legislative body and enforcement to do it. That is her entire mantra. That is the way she's conducted herself all of her entire political career. She continues by saying, intelligence is our best tool in keeping America secure. Of course, she's in favor of extending these provisions through 2013, which is what Obama wants to do. But Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy has pushed a rival measure with the same timetable, but limiting the government's ability to use the various powers and greater scrutiny when they do, notably to protect against abuse or needless invasions of privacy. He says, quote, I do not support permanent extension of these surveillance authorities. He says, I support strengthening oversight while providing the intelligence community the certainty it needs to protect national security. Leahy also called for action well before December, warning that, quote, we should not extend this debate into an election year and risk that some people will play politics with our national security. Of course, Obama has pressed lawmakers for an extension through December 2013, while leading Senate Republicans have called for making the powers permanent, but signaled they could back Feinstein's measure. These are Senate Republicans that want to make it permanent. Are you serious? Are you flipping serious? You want to make this permanent. Now, here's the thing. During World War I, there's a whole lot of freedom and liberties that were basically to hell with freedom and liberty. We're in crisis mode. It's wartime. We don't care about the Constitution. We're going to do what we have to do. It happened again during World War II. Remember the internment camps with Japanese Americans? To hell with the Constitution. This is what we're going to do. Post-9/11. Wow. We really need to be able to spy on everybody. So, let's pass the Patriot Act. So, if you do what we, the government, want you to do, we'll define you as a patriot, otherwise we're going to call you a right-wing extremist. And we're going to pass these laws. If you haven't done anything wrong, you got nothing to worry about. Otherwise, we're going to decide whether or not it's right or wrong. And you got all kinds of stuff to worry about because we're going to be on you. That is what we're facing. Now, they won't make it permanent anytime. They haven't made it permanent any time in the past because it eventually would be completely struck down. As long as it's only passed a little bit here and a little bit here with short extensions, lawsuits against these different laws These court cases against them expire when the law expires. When they extend it, it's a whole new law. Generally speaking, a whole new court case, which just doesn't make it all the way high enough into the court. So, we have lawmakers who are supposed to be protecting our freedom and liberty, not providing with some sort of security level, our national security. That's being exchanged. The exchange is happening right in front of our face. We have the people who are supposed to be protecting our freedom and liberties, even in the House of the Republicans, where freedom and liberties are supposed to stand tall, now saying that they want to make these permanent changes. Where are these people's heads at? Where are they at? This is the type of thing which will drag a nation into the same thing that we saw on the streets of Cairo, Egypt, just in the last couple of weeks. This is the sort of thing which will be the catalyst for that. If these people don't really wake up and say, wow, you know, we cannot continue to beat up the freedoms and liberties of the American people. My thoughts.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill@2aradio.com. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not when you belong.
And welcome back. So, again today, we're speaking about how, at all levels of government, there are primary A number one job is scripted out to be to protect our freedoms and liberties, and how that is a miserable failure across the board. It's been long lost, long forgotten, long done away with. Well, it happened in both the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate when it came to passing and extending the Patriot Act law. Three very controversial parts of that. Now, the U.S. Senate voted just yesterday to extend controversial counterterrorism search and surveillance powers at the heart of the Patriot Act law, which was adopted after the 9/11/2001 attacks. Keep in mind, these attacks happened 9 and a half years ago, nearly a decade ago, and they were initially a 45-day emergency authority. They've been with us for a decade now. Nearly an entire decade. If you read the legislation, you realize they are in total violation of the Constitution. However, Congress, both House and Senate, continue to pass, and the President continues to sign extensions into law, saying they're emergency powers. That's how Hitler started to get all of his control, because he needed emergency powers. And what happened with that? With the three provisions set to expire February 28th, lawmakers approved legislation to extend them to May 27th, backed by an 86-12 margin in the Senate, which is one day after the House of Representatives passed an extension all the way through December 8th. Keep in mind the House voted on this last week when they referred to it as a non-controversial piece of legislation. It needed to pass by a two-thirds majority, and it didn't. So they brought it back. It gave it limited debate. I think it was only 1 or 2 hours. I think 1 hour of debate in the House that they were allowed to have, if memory serves correct. If not, it wasn't long. They severely limited the debate on it. And of course, they packed it with a lot of people who said, oh, yeah, we should do this. It was good for cops. And the naysayers, they didn't give them the floor. And then they passed it by the simple majority where they only needed 50% plus one. The vote came amid a bitter battle over how long to extend the intrusive powers at the core of the signature legislation response to the terror strikes nearly 10 years ago, and with what safeguards. Keep in mind, guys, with any sort of authority like this that Congress grants to the rest of the government, their other lackey scumbag friends, you must first imagine this power in the hands of your worst enemy. The worst enemy you can think of. And decide whether or not you would feel that your freedom and liberties would still be protected. If the answer is no, then the government shouldn't be passing these laws. The provision allows authorities to use roving wiretaps to track an individual on several telephones, track a non-U.S. national suspect of being a lone wolf terrorist not tied to extremist groups, and to seize personal or business records or, quote, any tangible thing seen as critical to an investigation. While the White House backs extensions, extending those powers through 2013, the law has drawn fire from an unusual coalition of liberal Democrats and Republicans tied to the arch-conservative Tea Party movement who say that the laws go too far. Quote, I might not have the votes to stop this bill, but we should at least discuss this in public as adults. We should have the opportunity to explain why the Constitution is being violated, according to Republican freshman Senator Rand Paul, the son of Congressman Ron Paul. Here's another quote. It says, we should talk about how we do not have to give up who we are in order to fight terrorism, he continued, echoing complaints from Democratic foes of the measure as well as the ACLU. Senate Intelligence Committee Chairwoman Dianne Feinstein, scumbag Yenta out of California, says, quote, the threat against the United States from terrorism, cyber attacks, the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, and others is at a very high level. Well, of course it is, Hook knows, because in this deal, you ugly witch, had the authority that's been given to Department of Homeland Security and all sorts of law enforcement in the last 10 years that they've had these exceptional powers, half of someone's career, by the way, they should have learned how to otherwise figure out the information that they need without having to violate the rights and the Constitution of the United States of everybody else in America. Dianne Feinstein is a black-heartened witch at heart. Screw America, screw the American people, and let us legislate everyone from cradle to grave, and I am happy to be part of the legislative body and enforcement to do it. That is her entire mantra. That is the way she's conducted herself all of her entire political career. She continues by saying, intelligence is our best tool in keeping America secure. Of course, she's in favor of extending these provisions through 2013, which is what Obama wants to do. But Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy has pushed a rival measure with the same timetable, but limiting the government's ability to use the various powers and greater scrutiny when they do, notably to protect against abuse or needless invasions of privacy. He says, quote, I do not support permanent extension of these surveillance authorities, he says. I support strengthening oversight while providing the intelligence community the certainty it needs to protect national security. Leahy also called for action well before December, warning that, quote, we should not extend this debate into an election year and risk that some people will play politics with our national security. Of course, Obama has pressed lawmakers for an extension through December 2013, while leading Senate Republicans have called for making the powers permanent, but signaled they could back Feinstein's measure. These are Senate Republicans that want to make it permanent. Are you serious? Are you flipping serious? You want to make this permanent. Now, here's the thing. During World War I, there's a whole lot of freedom and liberties that were basically to hell with freedom and liberty. We're in crisis mode. It's wartime. We don't care about the Constitution. We're going to do what we have to do. It happened again during World War II. Remember the internment camps with Japanese Americans? To hell with the Constitution. This is what we're going to do. Post 9/11. Wow. We really need to be able to spy on everybody. So, let's pass the Patriot Act. So, if you do what we, the government, want you to do, we'll define you as a patriot, otherwise we're going to call you a right-wing extremist. And we're going to pass these laws. If you haven't done anything wrong, you got nothing to worry about. Otherwise, we're going to decide whether or not it's right or wrong. And you got all kinds of stuff to worry about because we're going to be on you. That is what we're facing. Now, they won't make it permanent anytime. They haven't, I should say. They haven't made it permanent any time in the past because it eventually would be completely struck down. As long as it's only passed a little bit here and a little bit here with short extensions, lawsuits against these different laws, these court cases against them, expire when the law expires. When they extend it, it's a whole new law. Generally speaking, a whole new court case, which just doesn't make it all the way high enough into the court. So, we have lawmakers who are supposed to be protecting our freedom and liberty, not providing with some sort of security level, our national security. That's being exchanged. The exchange is happening right in front of our face. We have the people who are supposed to be protecting our freedom and liberties. Even in the House of the Republicans, where freedom and liberties are supposed to stand tall, now saying that they want to make these permanent changes, where are these people's heads at? Where are they at? This is the type of thing which will drag a nation into the same thing that we saw on the streets of Cairo, Egypt, just in the last couple of weeks. This is the sort of thing which will be the catalyst for that. If these people don't really wake up and say, wow, you know, we cannot continue to beat up the freedoms and liberties of the American people. My thoughts.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill@twowayradio.com. I will not break. I will show.